Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening or good afternoon, wherever you are. Welcome to Voice of Indie, the podcast that promotes authors, musicians, and artists. Episode number 10, we are into the double digits. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, as always, is co-host Stephen Gies. Welcome aboard, Stephen.
Hi, Beam. Hi, listeners. I'm over here doing the double digit dance, show 10. We're really on a roll here.
All right.
Now, last week, we held a contest for our author, Mark Harlow, on his book, Operation Counterpunch, a thriller. And we asked people to go to the YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, find the video Operation Counterpunch, and leave a comment. And we have two winners to announce, Gwen Plano and Verwayne Greenhoe. Both have won autographed personalized copies of Operation Counterpunch. We'll have to get on Mark Marlowe and get those done and get those shipped out to you soon. As always, winners, please, if we do not already have your information, use the contact at freshinkgroup.com and send us the information so we know where to send your books.
And this week, we have a giveaway as well, an autographed, personalized, dust-jacketed hardcover of our guest tonight, Robert G. Williscroft's Icicle, A Tensor Matrix. Once again, go to YouTube, Fresh Ink Group channel, and leave a comment in the comments under the book trailer for the Icicle Tensor Matrix book. Simple thing to do, people. I mean, it's you get over there, you leave a comment, hey, listen to the show, I'm leaving a comment, here you go. Or you can leave a comment about the book trailer itself, or hey, whatever you want to talk about. But just leave a comment, and you too can be in the drawing for a signed book.
We're trying to send a lot of traffic over to that channel so they can look at all these fantastic book trailers all of our authors have. We're also thrilled to see that we were up to 97 subscribers yesterday, so with a little bit of luck, we can break 100 this week on our way to 100,000.
Get over now, there and smash that subscribe channel. Subscribe
smash
button.
Smash it. We are also on Twitter right now, monitoring the hashtag Fresh Ink Group. That's hashtag Fresh Ink Group. So if you go to Twitter and in the search box type in hashtag Fresh Ink Group and click on the latest, then you can monitor in real time and you can either post comments that we can read over the air or you can ask questions of our guest tonight.
That's right. And also, we are taking phone calls as usual. If you would like to ask a question or you have a comment for tonight's guest, just simply dial 516-453-9902. Once again, that is 516-453-9902.
And I see we already have a comment on Twitter from Verwayne Greenhoe. Woo-hoo, I won. Laugh out loud. Thanks. We've made his day. Keep in mind, people, that during the show, you will hear us play audio commercials. These are the audio tracks from the video commercials or video trailers that are in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube. So make sure you get over there, watch our trailers, urge other people to watch them. Make sure you like them. Click that little thumbs up. And if you're not already a subscriber, please subscribe. Help us get that number up over 100.
Subscribe. Yeah, like Stephen just said, get that number up over 100, and then we'll shoot for 200. This helps us with building this platform that we're trying to build. But today we're welcoming Robert G. Williscroft. He's the author of science fiction, He's an adventure thrillers writer and much more. Stephen, you want to tell everybody about our guest?
Yes. Dr. Willis Croft is a retired submarine officer, deep sea and saturation diver, scientist, businessman, author of numerous books and hundreds of articles, and a lifelong adventurer. He spent 22 months underwater, a year in the equatorial Pacific, 3 years in the Arctic ice pack, and a year at the geographic South Pole. He holds degrees in marine physics and meteorology, a doctorate for developing a system to protect scuba divers in contaminated water. Dr. Woodcroft's decorated service includes 23 years in the U.S. Navy and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA, directing diving operations throughout the Pacific and Atlantic. Besides penning novels and nonfiction books, he also writes extensively in other forums, including articles on terrorism-related topics. Since becoming a Fresh Ink Group member author, he has launched two series and is planning more exciting projects. Robert G. Williscroft lives in Centennial, Colorado, with his family.
Welcome to the show, Robert. Do you have anything else to add to that?
Well, that kind of covered it, and thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation this evening.
Welcome, Robert.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first off, you're a family man. You want to share a little bit about your family with our listeners?
Sure. I have a son in Bali, of all places. He just passed his 50th birthday, and I have an acquired family here in Centennial, although the boys are in college at this point in Boulder, Colorado, rather in Golden, Colorado, at the School of Mines, and at the University of Oklahoma, and a stepdaughter who is a zookeeper. And I can't remember the name of the town she's living in now. It'll come.
We won't hold you.
Yeah, she's a zookeeper. Where's she a zookeeper at?
That's what I can't remember right now.
Okay.
It's in Wichita. There we go. Wichita.
Wichita. Okay.
Wichita. Yeah, they just moved there recently.
All of our listeners in Wichita are thinking, how can he forget about us?
Yeah.
When you said your son was in Bob, my first thought was the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But then I thought, well, it sounds like the apple falls halfway around the world.
Yeah, Jason joined the Marine Corps many years ago and got selected for the Naval Academy and went to the Naval Academy and took his commission in the Navy. And he now runs a group of current and ex-naval officers called Ring Knockers. He does it out of Bali because Bali's a nice place to live, and they get together every week on the internet and work together to help officers coming out of the military to help them find good positions in the civilian life.
Now, we see that you have a lot of awards and recognition, and probably too much for us to try to cover. Now, I urge people to go to your website. You want to tell them that URL, Robert?
Yeah, it's very, very simple to find. It is robertwilliscroft.com.
Great. And if you go there, listeners.
Just like it's pronounced.
Yeah, if you go there, you can find out a lot more history about Robert. He's had quite a variety of experiences. But out of all these awards and recognition, the one that I'm curious about is the Bullshit Award. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, some years ago, while I was in the Seattle area, Washington, I was still a commissioned officer in the NOAA Corps, finishing up my career at that point. I had written a couple of books on diving, and they had made a somewhat of an impact. The YMCA diving system picked up one of the books as their lead diving book, and the International Diving Educators Association picked up both of the books, and so. People knew who I was, and I got a call one afternoon from somebody I'd never heard of telling me that I had received the award for the Scuba Diver of the Year from the Washington State Scuba Diving Council, and would I be available to attend the ceremony? Well, it was a big surprise, a delightful one, and so sure, I said, I'll attend the ceremony. I did, and I got this really cool award. But then it turned out that there were about 1,500 or so instructors from around the Pacific Northwest, diving instructors, and this was a convention of sorts, and one of the events that they had was called the bullshit conference, the bullshit contest. The idea is that you'd sit on the stage for 15 minutes, timed, and tell a story. And the most interesting story, based upon the audience applause, would win the award. The award is a fellow who looks like a golfer, except instead of a golf club over his shoulder, he's swinging a bull.
I love that.
I had recently read the story of Shackleton and his Antarctic explorations, and the name of the book was Endeavor. And one of the tales that he told was about a leopard seal that nearly ate one of his crew members. And he had 3 bullets left at this point. They were adrift on the ice, trying really hard to get to the continent, but being swept out to sea. And finally, at the last moment, he fired one of his 3 remaining bullets into the head of the leopard seal and killed it and saved his guy. And I was kind of inspired by the story, and so I modified it and made it underwater and made myself as the hero, and I told this swashbuckling tale, timing myself for 15 minutes on the stage, and I guess everybody bought into it. In fact, a lot of people told me that they thought it was a real story.
Yeah. That's terrific.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, and as Stephen pointed out, you're a man of experiences, and you just told the bullshit story. How have these experiences that you've lived, which have been some incredible ones, how have they been incorporated into your writing of your novels and your series?
Well, how many hours do we have to talk about that?
We got an hour.
Go ahead.
The first book that I really incorporated stuff into is Operation Ivy Bells. Back during the Cold War, I led a group of saturation divers, and I'll explain what a saturation diver is in just a moment. But we boarded a nuclear submarine, kind of an old decrepit thing near the end of its life, called the Halibut. We went into the Sea of Okhotsk. That's between the Kamchatka Peninsula and northern Siberia. The sea is international waters, but the Soviets pretty much considered it their own territorial water. Anyway, we snuck in there. And on the ocean bottom, we located an underwater communications cable that the Soviets used from their big submarine base on the eastern shore of the Kamchatka Peninsula, and it transmitted communications ultimately all the way to Moscow, because in that central system, everything was decided in Moscow. We tapped into it down on the ocean bottom. Locked out of the submarine, tapped into it, and I incorporated this whole thing into a novel telling the story of Operation Ivy Bells. It became a bestseller, and it was it's easily the most popular book that I've written. I said I'd talk briefly about saturation diving, just in a nutshell. When you go diving, if you stay down longer than a set amount of time, you have to spend time on the way up decompressing, because your blood takes on excess nitrogen from the compressed air that you're breathing. And if you come up too quickly, the nitrogen will form bubbles in your bloodstream, and these can be very damaging and can even kill you. It turns out that after you've been at a given depth for a certain amount of time, your bloodstream has taken up all of the nitrogen it can. It is saturated to that level. And from that point on, you can stay down there as long as you wish, and you only have to decompress once coming up. So that's what saturation diving is. I've been all the way down to 1,000 feet.
Wow.
Kind of fun.
100 is my limit. Anytime I ever did a deep dive, they always had a bar hanging off the side of the boat about 20, 25 feet down so that you could just wrap your arm around it and kind of hang there and blow all that nitrogen out for a while. But, Beam, you've got a commercial for Operation Ivy Bells. Why don't we roll it?
All righty.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. An update of the popular bestseller now launching the Mac McDowell mission series. Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge, Mac McDowell, faces the greatest challenge yet, leading his team into a critical Cold War mission of counter-Soviet espionage and proving what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. Operation Ivy Bells is proudly published in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats by the Fresh Ink Group.
Now, once Robert launched Ivy Bells and it became a bestseller, he brought it to Fresh Ink Group and decided to turn it into the Mac McDowell Mission series. So, Robert, why don't you tell us what's happening with that series now?
Well, the second book in the series was just launched last week. It's called Operation Icebreaker. In Operation Ivy Bells, we took an old submarine down into the Sea of Okhotsk. In Operation Icebreaker, we took a submarine, a newer submarine that had been involved in an underwater collision and had to be in the yards to get fixed. And instead of just fixing it and sending it back to sea, we had it modified so that it was specifically outfitted to be able to launch saturation divers and to lay underwater communications cable. And in Operation Icebreaker, Toothus, the name of this submarine, is assigned to lay acoustic array cables up under the Arctic ice pack off of Greenland and off of Alaska. And the story follows the actions of the Toothus as she heads up underneath the ice, is tagged by a very advanced Soviet submarine. And remember, all this takes place during the Cold War. So we're talking the late 1970s and early to mid 1980s. And so she has to escape the tracking of the Soviet submarine. And ultimately, the Soviet submarine is damaged in the process of chasing Toothus. And the crew ends up having to abandon her off of Alaska in a hole in the ocean bottom, about a 500-foot hole off of Point Barrow, Alaska. And the crew of the Toothus and Mac McDowell and his divers end up going to Kodiak, getting having the DSRV, the Deep Submergence Rescue Vehicle Mystic, flown in, and it's mounted on the back of the Toothus, and they go back out under the ice. And using the Mystic, they actually penetrate the abandoned Soviet submarine and collect intel. The story, that is sort of in a nutshell, the story of Operation Icebreaker, and it sets the scene for the book that I'm about halfway through right now, Operation Arctic Sting, that picks up from that point where they go back again to the Alpha submarine, and this time they put a crew on board, Mac and some of his people, and surreptitiously bring it through the Arctic ice pack to the east coast of the United States. The big problem is that the reason the crew abandoned the Alpha in the first place is that its reactor froze. The Alphas used a lead bismuth coolant, and if the reactor shuts down while she's underway, the coolant freezes and the reactor becomes useless. And so they had no way to generate power, no way to generate air. They had to abandon, which they did. And so our heroes take the submarine, having to charge the batteries roughly once a day with divers connecting underwater shore power cables between the Toothus and the Soviet submarine. And so they work their way through the Arctic against tremendous odds, being chased by Soviet submarines and divers and polar bears and orcas and other critters of the sea, and they finally do make it to the East Coast.
All right. We do have a caller. Would you be interested in taking a question from a caller?
Sure, I'd be delighted.
All righty. Hello, caller. State your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Ginger, and I'm calling from Ohio, Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, Ginger.
Hi. I'm an Air Force brat, which means that I was born, my dad was in the Air Force, so I'm somewhat familiar with military. And I'm really impressed with Willis Cross naval background. I'm wondering, how does that lead into writing science fiction?
Oh, that's a great question.
From underwater to outer space.
Well, hello, Ginger.
Hi.
I can tell you this. What I did, for real, during my military career, many people would call science fiction. For example, at the South Pole, we had a major fire in our fuel supply while we were 17 of us isolated 900 miles from the nearest other human facility, and they couldn't come to help us out. That borders on science fiction. In any case, I've been a fan of science fiction all of my life. Robert Heinlein was my favorite author, and I
Mine
just kind
too.
Of gravitated to it.
Well, I imagine spending time on a submarine is kind of like spending a lot of time on a spacecraft. You're in close quarters and you're trying to get along and deal with emergencies.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. The only real difference is that a submarine, you still experience gravity. And on a spacecraft, at least the ones that we will have for the foreseeable future, unless it's doing some kind of rotational artificial gravity, you'd be weightless.
Ah. Well, thank you. I look forward to reading your, let's see, how many books are you coming out with?
Well, we just published Icicle and Icebreaker, and we will be coming out later this year or early next year with Operation Arctic Sting. And that will be followed by the second book in the Oort Chronicle series, currently titled The Oort Federation.
Okay, great. Well, I'm looking forward to it. The books on Amazon seem to be have a lot of good ratings. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for calling, Ginger.
Now, Robert, this one that just came out, Operation Icebreaker, I understand you have some kind of a deal that you're offering on that?
Yes, we are. I've got to pull that information up in front of me. Do you happen to have it in front of you?
I do not.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's come back to it, and I'll pull it up so that I have the details correct, all right?
Okay, yeah, the basics are you're offering two book sets, Operation Ivy Bells and Operation Icebreaker together, two hardcovers, and you autograph and personalize them?
I do that, that's correct, and I don't have the prices in front of me that we set up for that, but anybody who wants to get the set, and it's an excellent price, it's about half of what they would be if you buy them from Amazon.
I believe it was $45 for the two hardcovers, I believe.
That's correct. It was $45 for the two hardcovers, and I think it was $30 for the two softbound.
That sounds about right. But if they go to the website to place the order, the prices are there, obviously.
Yeah, what they can do is go to my website and just contact me, you know, where it says contact, just contact me and say what you want, give me the shipping address, and what you want is an inscription, and then your email, and I'll contact you, and we'll arrange payment, and then I'll get the books to you.
Okay, great.
There you go. All right. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments and you want to participate in this program with Robert G. Williscroft, 516-453-9902. Once again, that is 516-453-9902. 443-9902. We are taking calls all night, all hour, I should say. And we do have a comment on Twitter as well from Verwayne Greenhoe. This goes back to the bullshit award. He says, oh, dear, I grew up with a grandfather and father back in the 60s, and every Friday and Saturday night was BS night. I heard so many tales, I became a writer.
There you go.
That's great.
Now, Operation Icebreaker, I understand there is an audiobook in progress.
Yes, there is. We're just in the initial stages of it. The audiobook is going to be it'll be narrated by a well-known narrator, Trenton Bennett, and will be accompanied by sound effects and appropriate music. I think it's going to be a really exciting audio experience.
I look forward to that. And here's our little plug for Fresh Ink Group. We are producing these audiobooks now, and we're adding sound effects and music and trying to make them a real-time kind of experience for listeners. So I look forward to being able to work on that one.
I do too.
Okay. We probably need to keep moving along and shift to your next series, The Ork Chronicles. And we have a commercial for that, don't we, Beam?
We sure do.
Introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Willescroft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they are coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah, and listeners, get over to the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel and check out that video book trailer for Icicle. It was a lot of fun putting that one together.
We should probably point out that the audio version will be out just as soon as it's released by ACX.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, the production on that one is done, but it takes more than a month to get them actually onto ACX. So that's the process we're in right now. That was a lot of fun to work on. And I grew up a science fiction maven myself, and Robert A. Heinlein was also my favorite writer. We actually had science fiction as a literature class in high school, and I was reading all 60 out of Heinlein's books at the time, and put together a little seminar that they let me teach to the class, and that was a lot of fun. When I was reading this first book in the Oort Chronicles series, I just felt like I was reading a lost Heinlein. I mean, you have your own style, and they were all your own ideas, but it just had that flavor, that tone. The characters came to life, and the story just clipped along like a typical. I loved that. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, but before I do, let me state that the Mac McDowell Mission books, the set is 45 hardbound and 25 softbound, not 30. So it's $25 softbound.
Okay, personalized, autographed, whatever it is that you want to say, so they can get one for yourself, get a set for yourself, and get a couple of sets for gifts, too.
Yeah.
They will make wonderful gifts in this Christmas period, and the covers are just remarkable. So, the Oort Chronicles. Let me tell you a little bit about Icicle. For many years, I have thought about, been in contact with the Cryonic Society and a couple of other groups that purport to make themselves available when a person is on his or her deathbed and freeze the remains or freeze the head, whatever the case might be, held at a very low temperature with the concept that somehow in the future, maybe the person can be revived. And if someone has the wherewithal to do that, it seems like a no-brainer, at least it did to me. And the more I thought about this, the more I realized that, hey, there's a story here. I had also been in contact with Keith Lofstrom, who is the inventor of the space launch loop that is featured in another science fiction book I've written called Slingshot. And this is a way of getting into space without using rockets, kind of like a space elevator, but it can be done with today's technology. Anyway, Keith had also invented another concept called Server Sky. What it is a swarm of ultimately of billions of small computer chips in orbit, in low Earth orbit and in and further out in geosynchronous Earth orbit. And these form the backbone for an enhanced internet. And in Icicle, I call it the global net. So with these concepts in mind, I started to play around with the idea, did some research, found out what's been done, what can be done, what might be possible, how might the world appear in the relatively near future, say within 100 years or so. One of the thoughts that occurred to me is already we're looking at using blockchain technology for security purposes, and there is such a thing as Bitcoin and other types of blockchain currencies that are absolutely secure. And so I decided that the world would probably be shifting to a blockchain type of currency. Each nation would have its own blockchain currency and would be able to collect taxes on every transaction that takes place between people. And so I built all of this up, and somehow Max, a tabby cat, found his way into the story, and he helped us explore the whole global net, and he shows up in some of the oddest places and ends up playing an interesting and strategic role in the whole story. One other thing forms a backbone for the series, and that is something called the Dark Forest Theory. Now, the Dark Forest Theory basically goes like this. It's an explanation for the Fermi Paradox. The physicist Enrico Fermi, at lunch with a group of his fellow physicists, once asked the question, Professor Drake, who's a friend of mine, by the way, wrote the Drake equation that indicated how many intelligent civilizations we ought to have in our galaxy. And it turns out it should be something on the order of, based on your assumptions, maybe 30,000 intelligent species. And his question was, well, where the hell are they? That came to be known as the Fermi Paradox. And a Chinese science fiction author developed an answer that he put in a book of his called The Dark Forest. Basically, he says that intelligent species in our universe are like hunters in the dark forest. They are creeping through the forest very quietly because if they're discovered, they'll be killed. And if they sense another intelligent being, they can't wait to find out whether that being is friendly or whether that being is malicious. They have to lash out, strike, and kill so that they won't be killed themselves. And therefore, in our galaxy, you have either marauding species who are out there killing everything they can find, or you have species that are hunkered down trying to hide from the marauders. And that forms the backdrop for Icicle.
It's wonderful how you weave all those together, too, with so much visual imagery that just picturing and imagining that being out there like that and surfing through the universe, I guess you could say. I just love doing that kind of stuff. I love reading those kinds of stories. So next up then is the audio book for that. And then what's the status of book two in the Orc Chronicles?
Book two is not written, but is being written. I expect to have it done sometime in the spring of 2021. That may be a bit ambitious. It might not get done until about June. It just depends on how quickly I can get it written. And that
ambitious seems to be your thing.
Yeah. Do you have a working title for it?
A working title right now is the Orc Federation. And I should drop back into Icicle for a moment. Our solar system is surrounded by a cloud of ice and comets discovered by an astronomer named Oort and called the Oort Cloud. And one of the things that arose in my conversation with Keith Wostrom was that there is no reason why a server sky kind of a computerized global net background couldn't exist in the Oort cloud. There could be an intelligence that occupies this trillions of ice chips that function as computer chips within the server sky system around Earth. And so this entity that is discovered, that Thorpe discovers in Icicle, turns out to be a civilization that had been on Earth long ago, and they managed to survive by fleeing to the Oort cloud when the Marauder struck. And so they've been there for a couple of billion years, but only as electronic entities. And that kind of forms a second background scenario for the whole story. And in the second book, they begin to play a prominent role as Braxton Thorpe and his people work closely with the Oort, who are at one and the same time a hive mind and individuals, whatever they choose to be. And they work with them to try and prevent a further destruction of our combined civilizations from the marauders that are out there.
And I have to wait till next June, huh?
Yeah, you want to take another caller, Robert? We've got another one lined up.
I would be happy to.
All righty. Hello, caller. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, folks. My name is Trenton Bennett, and I'm calling from Tampa, Florida.
Hello, Trenton.
Hi, Trenton.
Hey,
I recognize
Trenton.
That voice.
Nice to hear from you.
Hi, everybody. I'm loving this, and I really wanted to ask Robert a question. Out of all the stuff you've imagined in all of your writings, what would you think would be here on this planet 100 years from now in the future?
Boy.
Wow. Okay. For one thing, we're going to have something like server sky. We're going to have launch loops like in Slingshot. I'm almost positive that we will have blockchain currencies around the world. The regular money will have disappeared. I think that we will be able to upload personalities electronically. Elon Musk is working on that right now, and he's put in hundreds of millions of dollars into making this happen. So he's one of those guys who, when he puts his mind to it and puts his cash to it, it seems to happen. So I'm looking for that as a real possibility. Merc Drive, I think, playing around with the idea of using using the Casimir effect to create controllable wormholes. I think within 100 years that we're very likely to see something like that. Maybe instead of that, it'll be an Albuquerque star drive. But one way or the other, we're going to be able to get from here to there faster than light.
I would love to be around for that.
What other show offers talk about controllable wormholes?
Just to make sure everybody understands, Trenton is the voice of my audiobooks.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. We have a lot of fun working with him, and we're looking forward to the next Mac McDowell mission book coming our direction from him soon, too. Thanks for calling, Trenton.
Thank you all. Take care.
Now, we have a lot of books that we need to try to cover with you, Robert. So let's move on to the Star Child trilogy. You got a commercial for that, Beam?
We do. First of all, before we jump into that, I just want to say I had an opportunity to read Icicle by virtue of editing and working on the audio book. And I'm the guy sitting here of the three of us that I'm not a sci-fi guy. I haven't been a sci-fi guy since I was a kid. But I loved this story. It is incredible. It's engrossing, and it pulled me right in, and I'm waiting for the next one. So there's an endorsement right there.
A good one.
Well, thank you very much, Dave.
And here is the Star Child trilogy.
Now, the Star Child trilogy by Robert G. Willis Croft is complete. In Book 1, Slingshot, three scientist engineers reach for the stars as they blend their skills with a host of skilled colleagues to create the world's first space launch loop. A team of young eco-terrorists will go to any length to halt the project. One woman is determined to scoop the story, reporting events to a watching world. Slingshot ranges from Seattle's financial district to the ocean bottom off Baker Island to the edge of space and across the vast panorama of an equatorial Pacific. It's a love story, a gender bender, and a mystery about a missing aviatrix, a conspiracy, and a true believer. It's about high finance, intrigue, heroism, fanaticism, betrayal, and humanity's surge into outer space. In Book 2, The Star Child Compact, an international team ventures to Saturn's moon Iapetus to verify it really is a derelict starship. They discover the founders, descendants of the starship's builders, who arrived in our solar system 150,000 years ago. Together with the founders, the explorers advance founder science with momentous implications for the entire solar system, paving the way for a joint push to the distant reaches of the galaxy. But a Persian caliphate stowaway sabotages the mission, hoping to destroy science that he believes violates Islam. The Star Child Compact blends tomorrow's science with human foibles, fears, beliefs, and political intrigue, speculating on how civilization might develop while traveling on a generational starship, and how modern humans might interact with remnants of that civilization. In Book 3, the Iapetus Federation, besieged Israelis on Earth make their way to Mars as the Federation expands throughout the solar system. While global jihad rages on Earth, putting millions to the sword, the Star Child Institute develops wormhole transportation. But will this new technology be ready in time to rescue all that is left of the United States, the beleaguered Lone Star Conservancy, and remnants of other cultures around the globe? From hand-to-hand combat in the oceans, to battles on Earth's surface, to struggles in interplanetary space, our heroes fight to survive and expand to the far reaches of the universe. Robert G. Willis Croft is an adventurer, polar explorer, deep sea diver, nuclear submariner, scientist, and best-selling, award-winning author. His stories portray the accurate science and precise engineering that appeals to hard science fiction buffs. But the Star Child trilogy is for everyone who loves an epic tale, a grand journey by men and women who loom larger than life as they work, play, and love. Make the Star Child trilogy your own with individual hardcover, softcover, audiobook, and all major ebook editions worldwide, or collect the entire set for one epic journey by Robert G. Willis Croft, the Star Child trilogy.
All right, and listeners, we are talking with Robert G. Willis-Croft, science fiction author, and just an all-around adventurous guy. If you want to join the program, that's 516-453-9902, 516-453-9902, or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter, and give us your comment or your question.
The Star Child trilogy is another one that one of my favorites. I was starting to think that science fiction was kind of getting off into too weird, but I'm glad to see there's some innovative kind of contemporary science fiction happening now. Now I understand that Slingshot, the first book in the Star Child trilogy, that you launch another series.
It did, yeah. And let me first take just a couple minutes to describe what Slingshot's all about. The scientist that I mentioned earlier, Keith Lofstrom, had written a paper way back in the late 1970s about using something called a space launch loop to launch payloads into space without using rockets. I was about in the early 1980s. I found the paper. And I was on my way to the South Pole to spend a year there in charge of National Science Foundation atmospheric projects at the pole. And so I took this paper with me to study it. And I was absolutely intrigued by the concept. So a year later, when we came out of the pole and I arrived back in the States, I contacted Keith. And we got together and spent several days just talking about the space launch loop, the concept, and how it might actually happen, and we laid out the foundation for the novel Slingshot. It took several years before I actually got around to writing it, and it tells the story of building this incredible structure stretching 2,000 kilometers between Baker and Jarvis Islands on the equatorial Pacific with a band of soft iron that moves at roughly 14 kilometers per second and is able to launch payloads into space. And that the story of its construction and the finances and the bad guys and the good guys and the ultimate success of the program is what Slingshot is all about. And later, after all three books were done and I had moved on to other projects, I read an article about a wingsuit. Now, wingsuits are probably the most daredevil thing that a person can do on Earth in today's environment. You have the fabric stretched between your legs and between your legs and your arms, and you jump off of a cliff or out of a plane, and then you fly until you're getting fairly close to the ground, at which point you open a parachute to actually land. So guys are doing this from cliffs up in the mountains where they'll zip down through narrow, rocky canyons just a few feet above the ground and continuously moving ahead at the better part of 100 knots. It's a pretty exciting thing, and you can see videos of it on the Internet. Anyway, I came across an article from a German consortium that had developed a hard-cell wingsuit that they called the Griffon. And I looked at it. And my imagination just went wild. I began to thinking about, you know, what would happen if we took this and we developed it to the point where it was able to be launched from, say, a balloon at 150,000 feet, or how about from one of the sky towers of Slingshot at 80 kilometers?
Ooh.
And the story came together. I had this daredevil wingsuiter, champion wingsuiter, get recruited by the Navy SEALs to help them develop the wingsuit into a combat system. And the Daedalus Files is a book that contains four novelettes. The first one is Derek Tiger Bailey's development of the wingsuit itself. The second one is the first one, he drops down from 80 kilometers to an island in the Pacific. And the second one, he drops from low Earth orbit. He actually takes it into orbit and drops down from orbit. In the third one, his entire squad drops from orbit. And in the fourth one, he and his squad drop into a combat situation where they rescue a prominent U.S. citizen from terrorists who had taken him over in an island north of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean. But the story is a natural development of what's actually out there. And just last week, when I was giving a presentation to my son Jason's ring knockers, one of the fellows called me up afterwards and we chatted for a while. And it turns out that he couldn't give me the details because I no longer have a military need to know. But what he could tell me, told me that it looks like the military really is developing the Griffon hard shell wingsuit to do something very much like what's detailed in the Daedalus files.
And we have a commercial for it.
Yes, we do.
In Daedalus, Navy SEAL Derek Tiger Bailey, irreverent member of the SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, makes a harrowing first base jump in the experimental Griffon 7 hard-shell wingsuit from the edge of space. He test flies the armor-plated Griffon 10 in Daedalus LEO, catapulting into space by slingshot and dropping from a record-obliterating 160 clicks. Testing the enhanced Griffon 10 MK4 in Daedalus Squad, Bailey's six-man team believes it is fully prepared for hurtling around the world and staging critical re-entry, but challenged to innovate life-or-death solutions with only seconds to spare. It might not survive intact. Then the presidential frontrunner is seized by pirates for ransom in Daedalus Combat, and the SWIC team is called to action where it must literally improvise on the fly with everything to lose. Join Tiger Bailey through all four adventures in sci-fi master Robert G. Willis-Croft's Daedalus series, now collected for the first time as the Daedalus Files, SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, SWIC.
And we do have another... We have another caller. You can go ahead and finish your statement there, Robert.
I'm just saying it sounds exciting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In
Let's
my younger days, I'd
caller.
Have been lined up.
Not me. Most daring I ever got was jumping ramps on my bike. all right. So we're going to go ahead and take this caller while we do have a little bit of time left. We're down to about 7 minutes. So hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi, this is Alistair Mayer. I'm calling from Centennial, Colorado.
Hello, Alistair.
Oh, welcome. Welcome, Alistair. I recognize the name. I'm a fan of your science fiction.
Well, thank
Robert's
you.
Robert's Archaeological Adventures in E-Space series.
That's right. Yeah, I write, so far, strictly science fiction. I'm not, not into the military stuff as yet, although some of my science fiction does have some military subthreads to it. But... I had a question for Robert, and I've known Robert for quite a while, but this question is kind of out of the blue for him. So sorry to put you on the spot, Robert, but you've written a number of series, and as have I. The question occurs to me, since there's always a gap between the first volume of the series and maybe later volume of the series, is there anything, especially the Mac McDowell series or the Starchild series, that... you kind of wish you could go back and do differently in the first volume now that you've had a few years retrospective on it?
Boy, that's a great question.
It is.
Yeah. What happens when you're writing a series is that, especially when you get into the third or maybe even the fourth volume, is that you're constrained with the presumptions that you made in the first volume. Unless you have some way of magically changing things to accommodate what you've learned since then to somehow fit it into the story. That's a perennial problem. And one of the things that I have to constantly keep track of, because I've got several series going and I don't want to end up having some smart-ass nerd write me an email and say, well, this is what you said in Volume 2, and that doesn't work in Volume 4.
And they will, too.
Well, thanks. And so far, as you know, I've read all your books that have been published so far, and I've enjoyed them. And you've done a good job of integrating the early stuff into the later volume. So I know I'm looking forward to the next in both the Ort series and the Mac McDowell series.
You know, thank you very much. And just to make a comment here to those of you who are listening, Alistair Mayer, he does a terrific job with his T-Space series. It's a fascinating concept because when humans make the first interstellar trip, they find a planet that turns out to be terraformed to Earth standard roughly 50 million years ago. Exactly. It's been terraformed, and that's what the T for T-Space theory stands for, is everywhere they go from that point on, they keep finding these terraformed planets. And Al has not yet told me who did it. And he's working on a book somewhere in the future that's going to tell us all who's responsible for this terraforming. Fascinating series. I really enjoyed them.
Now, when we have him on the show, you can call in and put him on the spot and ask him that question.
Sounds fair. Thanks
for calling,
thanks
Alistair.
Thanks for calling, Alistair.
That is high praise from such a high-quality science fiction writer who knows the genre very well.
Okay.
So do you have any other Daedalus projects, Robert? Are you thinking of coming back to the wingsuits someday?
I might. At this point, Daedalus is going to sit there, and what I've been looking at and thinking about I think you may have heard the song "I Was a Highwayman."
Yeah.
And it goes on how the guy was a highwayman, and he took the baubles from the maidens, and then he's a dam builder, and he's a sailor, and ultimately he drives a starship. And I've been putting together an idea of creating a science fiction novel that follows that concept with a guy who somehow is immortal. We figure out how somewhere in the story, and it's just an idea that's floating around, but it might be a lot of fun. And if anyone out there is curious about it, send me an email and tell me the pluses or minuses of the idea.
I think it's a good idea. I think it's a fascinating idea. Definitely.
Yeah, very much.
We got about 2 minutes to go. So I do want to read this. There's one more comment on Twitter, and it's, again, from Verwayne Greenhoe. And he said, Robert, it sounds like you write like I do all of the time. Do you have a set schedule where you sit down to write each day, or is it when I can, where I can? I have four distinct times of day when I always write. You?
I get up in the morning, I push iron, I go running, and then I write.
Okay. That's a good schedule.
That would do it. And okay, we're running out of time here, Beam.
So, I want to say thank you, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us on the program tonight.
Yes, thank you.
Taking a little bit of time with us.
And
it has been my
everybody,
pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
Remember, go to the YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, and leave a comment on Robert's videos. And maybe you can win that hardcover.
Yeah, and remember, if you miss this show, anytime you miss it, you can catch it in the archives. We are on every Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, so remember this.
Next week, we'll have musicians Ron Tippin and his son Zach Tippin of the popular band Wide Track, based in Southeast Michigan.
These guys rock. They're prog rock. They're into, if you're into Pink Floyd and Rush and Yes and Genesis and even some of the 90s alternative stuff, man, you're gonna want to tune in and catch these guys. They're they, like I said, they rock.
Okay, look for us on social media.
Let me add a 10-second thing here. If you read a book, go on Amazon and review it.
Leave
a
review.
The lifeblood of an author.
Okay. We got to get
out. Thanks, everybody.
Enjoy the rest of your night, everybody.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.